are listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Cataraqui on Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee land.
Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, and Ellie Sturton. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. To start us off this evening, we have a few messages directly from the City of Kingston. Starting off, Gather Your Stuff giveaway day is August 16th. Saturday, August 16th is giveaway day, the day you put out reusable items you no longer want for your neighbors who might like them. Kayla Stratford, Supervisor of Solid Waste Disposal, states, quote, "Giveaway days are a perfect opportunity to give away or pick up items with life left in them, reducing waste and saving money. When you pick up free secondhand items, you're saving them from the landfill, as well as reducing the waste from packaging and the greenhouse gas emissions associated with manufacturing new goods." Giveaway day guidelines. Only set out appropriate items you know someone else might want. These include books, CDs, DVDs, furniture, and small appliances, electronics, construction materials, kitchen gadgets, dishes, cutlery, pots and pans, and yes, unwanted gifts. The Consumer Product Safety Bureau of Canada advises that these items should not be given away or picked up. Baby walkers, cribs, car seats, strollers, playpens, bath seats, mattresses, blinds, and toys. How to put items out. Place items on the curb in front of your home. Place stickers or signs on the items with the word free. Ensure any items that you do not want taken are kept away from items placed at the curb. And at the end of the day, bring any collected items back into your home. The city will not collect unwanted items left at the curb. Consider donating them to a local charity. How to pick items up. Respect other people's property. Don't walk on lawns or gardens. Take only the items that are marked free and placed at the curb. Don't leave previously picked up items on the curb at other people's property. Find these guidelines at cityofkingston.ca/collection. In another message directly from the city, due to current weather conditions, including extended dry periods and increased risk of wildfire spread, a total burn ban has been put in place for Kingston. This ban applies to the entire municipality and will be enforced in accordance with the open air burning bylaw. It will remain in place until conditions improve and Kingston Fire and Rescue deem it safe to lift the restriction. A total burn ban means the following activities are prohibited: setting off fireworks, all open air fires, including campfires, outdoor appliance fires, and agricultural fires and brush fires. The ban does not include outdoor appliances with mechanical shutoffs, such as smokers, barbecues, and charcoal appliances. However, please exercise extreme caution. Fire officials will monitor the situation and provide an update when conditions change. Starting Monday, September 1st, Kingston Transit will implement several planned improvements and seasonal service adjustments to enhance service for current and future customers. The upcoming service changes will benefit transit customers by increasing frequency, with more routes offering 15-minute or better service during peak periods, increasing access throughout the city to shift workers and other customers by offering trips beyond typical travel hours, and continuing predictable weekend service across the Cataraqui River during any scheduled LaSalle Causeway closures. The new schedule begins on Labor Day. All routes will run on a Sunday service, and regular weekday service will resume on Tuesday, September 2nd. You can preview the updated routes and schedules at kingstontransit.ca. The Great Lakes Museum has announced that the SS Keewatin has been selected as the 2025 Museum Ship of the Year by the Steamship Historical Society of America, SSHSA. The Keewatin, an Edwardian-era passenger steamliner, was acquired by the museum in 2023 and opened to the public in May 2024. The SSHSA is a nonprofit organization founded in 1935 that now has thousands of members. Their mission is recording, preserving, and sharing the history of engine-powered vessels for education and research purposes. The Keewatin was nominated for this award by SSHSA members and chosen by the organization's awards committee. Great Lakes Museum Executive Director Beth Shippers shared her initial thoughts when she heard the news.
We were thrilled. We were absolutely thrilled that we were chosen by the Steamship Historical Society of America for this award. They have members that are international, and there's thousands of members. So the fact that we were nominated and then chosen by them was really kind of awe-inspiring for us. We are thrilled mostly because of how it acknowledges the hundreds of people that have been working hundreds of thousands of hours over the past many years, you know, tirelessly renovating her and promoting her through public educational programs. And we also, you know, are thankful because it also, recognizes that the community that's been supporting the ship and the museum, contributions from donors and foundations and governments and local organizations that also support us in kind with materials and labor, you know, all of which working towards her preservation and the success that she has as a tourist destination, and, you know, getting the recognition for that has been really special for us all.
Shippers also dove into the work staff, volunteers, and board members have been putting in behind the scenes.
The ship will be a labor of love for many, many years ahead. When she arrived in October 2023, there was probably up until the weekend we opened for tours, people were working every single day for probably 10, 12 hours a day working on, you know, new carpets, renovating, like repainting and working on handrails and revarnishing, like the number of things that were being worked on. I can't even explain them all. There's so many. Everything from fixing up the engine room. The engine is spotless. They spent so much time cleaning her up and making her very presentable for the public so that we could actually explain what they're looking at. Also, I would mention the hundreds of hours of the staging crew that went through and itemized all the artifacts that are on the ship. So everything from clothing to records to instruments, magazines, silverware, everything that's, you know, that came with her, and staging her to be presentable as though you were a passenger walking on. So if you have that feel of the passenger experience. It's been a lot of work.
The museum celebrated the recognition on Saturday, July 26th.
We had members from the SSHSA come down, and that's the Steamship Historical Society of America. So members of their board came down. We had Ted Hsu was here, our MPP. We had the deputy mayor. We had board members. Community people came out from across Kingston. Lots of staff and volunteers were here. It was like a really nice celebration.
That wraps up your headlines for this evening. Next up is Jesse Bell with your CFRC Sports Desk.
This is Jesse Bell from the CFRC Sports Desk, and this is part 7 of our ongoing OUA football season preview. Today we look at the Windsor Lancers. After a strong season in 2024, I think it's safe to say that Windsor is no longer an overperforming underdog, but a full-blown playoff threat in the OUA. This is due largely to an outstanding hard-nosed defense and their remote location on the U.S. border. It is a punishing road trip for many teams to make to Windsor, and the Lancers do benefit from that. They also benefit from a strong recruiting pipeline into the United States. Other than departed linebacker Devin Verizuk, who was Canadian, all of Windsor's top players came from the States. It's a pretty simple story with this Lancers team. They have an awesome defense and strong special teams, but their offense does seem to struggle. They struggle to put points on the board consistently, and they struggle to pick up yardage against other tough, tenacious defenses. So when they play a team like Laurier or Western, they are often soundly outscored. If they can generate magic on offense, Windsor will be a legit contender. If they can't, they won't. I do predict that they will go 3-5 with victories over Waterloo, McMaster, and Toronto. I think they'll have some narrow losses against Ottawa and Laurier, but otherwise it'll be a slight step backwards for the Maize and Blue as they narrowly missed the playoffs thanks to a Week 8 homecoming loss to the Queen's Gales. And that's a wrap on today's sports report. Tune in on Wednesday for part 8 of our OUA season preview as we look at the Guelph Griffins.
Hi folks, I'm Ellie Sturton, and I've got a few arts updates for you. This past Saturday, the Women's Arts Festival was running in City Park. It was a huge success. There were countless artist booths lining the walking paths, live music flowed throughout the space, and it was great to see so many people come out to support all of the local female-identifying artists. Running since the late 1970s, it is the longest-running Women's Arts Festival in Canada. So if you missed it this year, don't worry, because it will be back. In theater news, the Kick and Push Festival is in full swing, and as a part of the Kick and Push, the Fringe Festival is currently running. There are lots of great theater productions to see all around town, one of them being The Turing Test, a play by Igor Yakimov. Today at 5:20 p.m. is the final performance of The Turing Test, starring actors Yuri Papov and Yana Menov. The play is a comedy, but draws connections to modern-day technology usage. It's meant to encourage audience members to look at their own relationship with AI.
It's not just interaction between robots and human. It's more about where we are going. If we give AI everything, even creative thing like art and drama and poetry, why we are here in that case?
That was Yana Menov talking about the play The Turing Test. To hear the full interview, make sure to check out the Kingston Curator podcast on CFRC's podcast network. I'm Ellie Sturton, and those are your arts updates for the day.
This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Monday, August 11th, it's going to be sunny and humid here in the city of Kingston. 28, feeling closer to 30 with the Humidex UV index of 8, so quite high. Tuesday, August 12th, daytime high of 30, but cloudy conditions. Going to be very warm and very humid, feeling closer to 32. Wednesday, August 13th, daytime high of 27, feeling closer to 31, UV index of 7, another cloudy, humid day here in the city of Kingston. Thursday, August 14th, daytime high of 27 degrees, feeling closer to 29, sunny conditions, but lower humidity than the last few weeks we've had here in the city of Kingston. Friday, August 15th, daytime high of 27, feeling closer to 30, sunny day, high UV index of 7, but once again, lower humidity than we've seen in recent weeks. Saturday, August 16th, it's going to be humid with some hazy sunshine, so a bit more of those wildfire smoke clouds rolling into Kingston again, feeling closer to 31, and yeah, it's going to be hazy, so maybe stay indoors on Saturday, August 16th. Sunday, August 17th, we once again have rain and a thunderstorm forecasted, high of 28, feeling closer to 34, so extremely humid. Perhaps that higher humidity will bring about a storm. It's been a dry drought condition here in Kingston and the greater areas, so rain is much needed. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, August 18th, daytime high of 24, projected to feel much less humid though, with just a daytime high feeling like 25. So if we get that thunderstorm on Sunday, it looks like the start of next week will be a little more bearable and nice. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. The LaSalle Causeway will be closed to pedestrians and motorists from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Sunday, August 17th. Here are some other key road closures for the week. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Abidon Road, Highway 2 to Middle is closed until August 15th for the removal and replacement of a culvert. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Cataraqui Woods Drive, Rosanna to Holden is closed from August 11th to August 28th from 9 to 3 each day for roundabout upgrades. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Middle Road, Joyceville to Highway 2, closed August 11th to 22nd, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day to complete culvert relining. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Victoria Street, Princess to North Bartlett is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. And Woodburn Road, Hitchcock to White White Church is closed for a contractor to complete culvert relining. Here are some other relevant road closures and delays. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure and intersection upgrades. Cataraqui Woods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, San Beta Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Please be aware of lane shifts, traffic speed limits, and share the lane signage. Gardeners Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence, expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle, expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. John Marks Avenue and Innovation Drive, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to start work on John Marks Avenue, Innovation Drive, and Discovery Avenue. Work includes curb, sidewalk, asphalt milling, and repaving. Lancaster Drive, Limestone to Jasper, expect delays while a contractor completes construction of new sidewalk and road improvements. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users and accommodate increased traffic from the Wabin Crossing. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Now coming up, we'll have a look at some great community events running in Kingston and the area this week. On Monday, as part of the Theatre Kingston Fringe Festival, Life More Sweet opens at Confederation Place Hotel. This original play by Martha Bailey asks, do you like the world as it is, or would you like a life more sweet? Running through to Sunday, tickets are $25 for adults and $15 for kids. On Tuesday, Salsa in the Square runs from 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. in Springer Market Square. Start with a beginner Latin dance lesson, then dance into the night with salsa, bachata, merengue, and reggaeton. It's free and for all ages. Later, at 7:20 p.m., catch A Play We Just Wrote, just now, at the Grand Theatre. Drag stars Selena Vile and Hilary Ass create a play entirely from audience suggestions. Tickets are $25. On Wednesday, Games in the Square takes over Springer Market Square from 6 to 8 p.m. with giant board...
CFRC 101.9 FM is pleased to present a new Airwave YGK workshop brought to our community. Young, emerging local musicians are welcome to join us on August 21st at 11 a.m. at CFRC for our free industry intro, Getting Your Music Out There workshop with Mark Garnas and Chancellor Miracle. Come learn about getting your band booked, applying to festivals, procuring booking agents, touring, funding, submitting music to CFRC and other radio stations nationally, plus other great tips and tricks for emerging musicians and bands. Space is limited. Register now through Instagram at CFRC Radio or our website at cfrc.ca. Visit the Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also always say they have the best popcorn in town. Visit Screening Room at screeningroom.com for upcoming show dates and ticket information. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Egg Salad, a brand new release from local jazz musician Oscar Evans. This is an original jazz composition mixing Brazilian rhythms with classic American swing styles. A bold and funky musical exploration featuring some of Kingston's finest jazz players. Catch Oscar literally everywhere and anywhere in Kingston and keep up with the latest by following him on Instagram at Oscar Mayfield Evans. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Egg Salad by Oscar Evans on your favorite platforms and enjoy it with us now here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Hello and welcome to Salt Licht in Rapture. I'm your host, Nishan Tung. Salt Licht in Rapture is a sonic exploration of, to quote Virginia Woolf, violent waves of emotion. Featuring both known and lesser known musicians and poets, a special emphasis is placed on oddball, enigmatic, outsider artists whose work invokes dreamscapes and feelings of alienation, nostalgia, melancholy, existential unease, and yearning. Join me on Fridays at 8 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Good day. You're listening to Free City Radio. This is edition 277, and I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks for tuning in. On the program this week, I'm going to be sharing a conversation with Damaris Baker, who is an artist and community activist based in Montreal. I got to know Damaris over the last years, mostly through community events and gatherings, that is both cultural events and demonstrations. And in the fall of 2024, when I launched a publication connected to this radio program called Free City Radio, of course, the publication looked at a series of interviews that I did with frontline community organizers and cultural workers in the context of the first pandemic lockdowns. And the publication is called Voices Beyond Lockdown. And I thought it would be interesting to share a few conversations with community members who participated in the event that launched this publication, and think of it as a way to extend the conversation, to continue to think critically about the important social, political, and economic lessons to be learned from the experience of the pandemic lockdowns, to think critically about mainstream narratives on the pandemic that really worked to erase the grassroots organizing that took place. And I think this is important in terms of thinking about social movement history. So it's really a pleasure to have spoken with Damaris, to hear directly reflections on this time from an artist and community activist. So here is our conversation.
There's been a lot of important activist responses to the realities of the pandemic, and the ways that community activists really stepped up to deal with a lot of the intersecting points of crisis at that time. And obviously that carries over into the present. As part of Free City Radio Project, there has been this small publication that came together called Voices Beyond Lockdown, Collective Action and Care Across Borders in a Time of Crisis. This was released in the fall of 2024, and it included the participation of a bunch of cultural workers and community activists. And also folks in Montreal have been engaging with the voices that are highlighted in these interviews through this project. And I thought it would be interesting to pick up those conversations by engaging with some people who took the time to read those interviews and engage with the ideas that are in this publication. So Damaris, you generously came to the launch, and I also know that you're often taking the time to actually read through, whether it's activist books or zines, and you're in a lot of different community spaces. And generously, you agreed to share some reflections sort of in response to this publication. So maybe we could just first start. You brought these beautiful notes with different pen colors, and it looks wonderful. But maybe you could first start by introducing yourself and, yeah, just any sort of initial impressions in response to this project that you felt are important. I guess we could start there.
Yeah. So I'm Damaris, they, them, and I have worked in the past in radio. I'm an animator and a musician, and I've been involved in various different activist movements in other places in the world, in Australia where I've lived and in Canada, just as a community member and as an artist. And I'm really appreciating the different voices that came across in this. You have Martin, who was speaking from the perspective of Indigenous people, speaking about COVID with no hospitals in the northern communities, the importance of the Native Friendship Centre in Resilience Montreal and on the ground communities that support Indigenous people living outside of the reserves, and just taking that perspective, which I was aware of, but then other perspectives, Mohammed speaking from the Guinean community about warehouse workers and just the sort of struggles. He said, I feel really sad that people are forced to go on a hunger strike to call for their rights and health to be respected. So, you know, if you're a mainstream person in Montreal who happens to have a house with room to look after your children, if you happen to have the technology to do things, you're in a very different situation to people who may be living in cramped quarters or working under temporary worker schemes and things. So these voices are particularly important and interesting for people to be aware that COVID impacted on everyone, but it impacts differently, very differently on people. So Zaid spoke about prisoners' rights, dangers of outbreaks in prisons, and just the right of prisoners to not have to live in conditions which are going to be challenging their health, the injustice of that, the fact that often there's no violent crime involved and they're basically there because of a carceral system which is very prejudiced and involves the racism against people of colour, immigrants, and all sorts of justice issues around prisoners' rights to start off with, let alone COVID issues.
I think often on that point, people forget sort of just that basic reality that there's this sort of cycle of economic violence that leads to incarceration. You pointed towards that.
Well, when I remember speaking to people and saying, like, is it 30% of people are actually waiting for their trials? They're basically not in, haven't even been found guilty of anything. They're just particularly in there because they can't pay bail, or in there because they happen to be a community that's been sort of targeted and criminalized. And this issue, like, it comes up here as well, this issue of who is criminalized, why have they been criminalized, what happens when you have been criminalized, and increasingly you're seeing protesters get criminalized, and then you have criminalization of people through not having particular papers or documents, which may be almost impossible to get from a government, even though you're working in the community. But this issue is one of the questions I put down afterwards. Who is criminalised? Who's presented as criminals? And what language does the right use to have us running in fear as they criminalise sections of the community that are resisting their particular agenda? But going a little bit off the track there. Yeah, having Zaid speaking about that, he also said his one of his biggest concerns and fears was that the largest benefactors would be corporations. The Liberal government is trying to bail out big corporations, to simply hand out public funds to corporations. And strangely enough, we saw a huge transfer of wealth during COVID from the people to corporations. And that hasn't really been questioned as to why that was done during COVID and the impact of COVID. I feel that COVID was the beginning of the things that we're seeing now with the far right, the government control, which was necessary, but the actual impact on workers and on immigrants, on incarcerated people, on Indigenous people, has been in many ways extremely negative, and increasingly it's just given more and more power to corporations to be criminalizing and pushing the agenda. And you see what's happening south of the border. Like, COVID was a preparation for that. They were watching very carefully what a government could do and get away with. If you run fear-based politics, you'll die unless we do this. We'll do this, from curfews and shutdowns. I know they were important, but
in terms of health,
just looking at the impact on people, it's interesting to see that, like, COVID has had a huge impact on the way that governments treat its people around the world. So Sundar's talking about the connections with Iraq in countries where you've had a US invasion that impacted the healthcare system, and on top of that, corruption, hospitals not having what they need, and then protests to try and look after people, protests against government. So, you know, what happens globally You have people in Canada with family all around the world and the global implications of that. So having voices, Brian spoke about the impact of industrialization, Chernobyl, Fukushima, the toxins and pollution, and mining, Canada mining, the impact that has. He's looking very globally about Canada's impact on the world. He also said many people don't understand in Canada why other people are fleeing war and poverty and economic justice, even though our system here depends on it. Mm-hmm. And then Shanice, what does it mean to critique the state, but also realize people need the resources that the state is holding? So some of these comments, and then Mustafa has so many wonderful comments that I had trouble finding quotes because there were so many good ones. He spoke. I just want to read all of his books. He spoke about pushing. I just can't even find. He said, the pandemic illustrates an argument for a policy change. It's underlining the collective needs that are at play. Only through socialized policies can we actually deal with this moment and, by extension, in the long term, save ourselves as a species from environmental disaster. This is crazy to think about, because the unwavering logic claimed by the market is that the market is dynamic. Governments need to give the market space. It's a giant scam, a Ponzi scheme at the highest levels. Like, he talks brilliantly about the very global supply chains, the fact that many economies in the global south, this is quoting him, are dependent on remittances from migrant workers. So you may have a woman who's working as a carer in Canada, sending 70% of her income back to the Philippines or whatever like that. And what does it mean when you have a COVID situation with the precarity of the work and her working conditions and the difficulty of what's happening, let alone her connection to things around the world? So I felt like these discussions, people sort of want to put COVID behind us because there's a vaccine and there's a vague sense of having a bit more control of things. But the fragility, the points of stress that were highlighted here for the most vulnerable people who are suffering injustices, structural injustices that have been created by the Canadian system, historically the racism, the settler colonial system, the impact on Indigenous people, the neglect, the impact on workers' rights, specifically immigrant workers' rights. If we don't highlight these things now and recognize these voices from COVID, then it's hard for us to push against Poilievre's agenda against immigrants if we don't actually look at what's happened and recognize the wisdom and the integrity of the voices of people speaking about their experiences. So yeah, we all suffered in different ways, but the ways that people suffered who were really in these precarious positions, that like the death and the suffering and the absolute stress of how do I care for people around me was and still is huge. And having been able to articulate this in clear ways, I think is crucial to how we organize and work together to resist the wave of far-right politics that's pushing in the world against us.
Respect. And while you were speaking, Damaris, I also remembered, and this is actually not in the zine because it sort of, I think, was articulated a bit over time. And these were interviews that were done really between like March, April, May 2020. But one thing that I think also is maybe like lost in narratives now is the role that activism played, for example, in having mass vaccine access, right? I'm just thinking of that when you were speaking. Like, it wasn't clear at the beginning how that would happen, right? Like, would people have to pay? Also, like, sort of interventions at a global level to ensure distribution, which was not happening at equitably at the beginning. There was a lot of activism around that, right? And then also for governments to be forced to take into consideration, like, also like the realities of daily workers, right? Like, for example, the Mexican government was very criticized for like thinking only about the economy in relation to allowing people to circulate at the time when vaccines weren't fully rolled out, but it was this sort of contradictory space, because also the reality is that so many people are daily wage earners, right? And so activists, I think, rightly deepened a lot of policy conversations during the pandemic. And I don't know if there's enough credit given, is what I'm trying to highlight, to the role that like critiques and social movements played in how things transpired at the time. I don't know if that resonates with you at all.
Yeah, I think you know a lot more about this than I do, because you were involved in the activist stuff. But it would be good to actually... It would be really good to highlight the work that activists did, because I know there was a lot of work listening to people and then pushing for it. I mean, there was also a hoarding of vaccines and yes. refusal to recognise that there was a global push in research that money was given to big pharma to develop vaccines, but then the vaccines were hoarded for the 6 months next vaccine or all sorts of things. But yeah, I mean, workers were speaking out, frontline workers were speaking out about not being given proper the masks and yeah. care for them to be able to do resource work. I mean, I have a friend whose father was sick. His mother's a migrant worker who was working in aged care. His father went to hospital, got COVID, brought it home, gave it to the family, then passed away. Wow. And so he was, you know, his mother was working in care. He was working from home, and he was unable to really grieve his father. I think they weren't allowed to invite family to the funeral. Wow. And so people, these stories which just kind of disappeared, and there wasn't really a public grieving or recognition mm-hmm. of the suffering and grief that people went through. You mm-hmm. weren't even able to publicly grieve mm-hmm. things. But recognition of what the activists actually were able to do and achieve in terms of responding to people saying this is what we need to do, and this is what's coming out in these voices as well. There was arguments, you need to deal with prisoners' rights in terms of healthcare, we need to take care of people, we need mm-hmm. to really take care of people and recognise people's rights in terms of healthcare and being safe in the workplace. So mm-hmm. yeah, I think this is part of that, but I wish there was a conversation between the activism that was done then and what's happening now. It feels like people want to close the door mm. on what happened during COVID, because mm-hmm. even you mentioned before, it feels like a little time capsule. Why does it feel like a time capsule? Mm-hmm. COVID is still here. We mm-hmm. have a vaccine, but the impacts of what happened during COVID True. Are still being felt, and there should be a conversation between how did COVID change things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did a little page here, which was my comment on things that are happening right now. So I had COVID, pandemic, global health crises. That's still there with us now, like fear of other pandemics. How do we care for people? Then you have climate change, mm-hmm. but rise of the far-right fascism, rise of corporate power, billionaires controlling trade and governments, AI technology in the service of empire, surveillance, military, social control, the genocide in Gaza and Palestine legitimized by Western powers, the end of international law as we knew it in the past, because it's been so challenged. The ongoing criminalizing of immigrants while wars, genocides, resource neocolonialism creates refugees and climate change as well. This migration around the world for work and forced migration. Genocides destabilizing in relation to conflict minerals, the Green Revolution. We're talking here about Congo, DR Congo, and then the end of US dominance in terms of a rise of BRICS, in terms of the US dollar and the petrodollar, attacks on workers' rights, the imperial boomerang in terms of military police criminalizing poverty, dissent, Emmy Césaire's idea of what is inflicted onto the colonial countries like Africa, the austerity that was enforced by the IMF on Africa in the 80s and 90s comes back to the US, and there's a stripping of public services and everything, which is exactly what has been done, was forced just in using debt, and has been so sort of activists have pushed back against that so much, and it's like, oh, austerity comes to Europe, of course, but North America as well, and then Ukraine, Palestine, DR Congo, Lebanon, Syria, Tigray, Haiti. So areas of huge struggle and conflict around colonial and empire struggles. So this, it feels kind of exhausting to have all this happening, but I think using COVID, of course, using Palestine and various, so many powerful ways which you can see exactly what the imperial forces are doing, but COVID highlighted a lot of those areas as well. You can learn a lot, like a conversation with COVID and Palestine, actually the struggles and the articulation of what people need and the lies and the complicity of governments in actually sort of trying to gather and solidify control against people. This would be a very interesting conversation to have.
I like how you've done these sort of mind maps, and I'm thinking also about like how community experiences in a city like Montreal, Geogeage, Munyang, you're at a lot of different protests. I've seen you at these different demonstrations, and one thing that comes to my mind is also like, you know, a publication project like this, Voices Beyond Lockdown, is about like hearing a bunch of different people, but you're familiar with this, like when you're at a protest, all the topics that you just mentioned seem, you know, like there's a bunch of different connection points there. But in a protest, you could easily talk about all these things with the people that you're encountering, right? And for me, it sort of like highlights how like a social movement space is so important, right? Like in terms of like learning, in terms of like making those connections and like building an analysis, and also hopefully through that, what counter power looks like.
And this is interesting because I gathered a thing at the end. Oh yes, which was like a response to that I wanted to sort of say to people, which is yes, it's complicated, but I would say three things. Since the 1600s and before, there's always been resistance to the violence of empire, and all of us are complicit and also have resistance in our history. So you can find your history of resistance in your family, connect to it, and start unraveling your internalized white supremacy without getting stuck like a rabbit in the spotlight. Like, find an area that's meaningful to you in terms of your family and your identity, and refusing this privilege of whiteness that just washes the way the resistance of everyone has resistance in the past. Also, local resistance works and local groups, which, you know, speaking here in your group is a really powerful presentation of different local groups. So I would invite people to join a local group about migrant rights, prisoners' rights, disability justice, just learning and unlearning while you are doing a very simple thing that you can just support a group in one particular way.
Yeah.
And yes, we're all complicit, but you listen to the most impacted and find direction in action together. So just the idea, there are so many groups in Montreal that are doing lovely things, but getting people together to talk to one another about things, getting abolition movements to work with immigrant right movements, criminalization across borders, and working with people on the ground is important, but also having a sense of solidarity between groups can help when you have times where we need to have a sense of gathering and a sense of pushing back together. We can support each other in ways, and I know we often need to work with people who understand things so we can get the work done on the ground, but also having times where we gather together and connect these things in powerful ways, I think it can help to have a solidarity around areas of resisting the violence which we're starting to find increasing around the world. The violence, really, the criminalizing of people needs to just be completely pulled apart. The idea you can just say you're a terrorist and therefore you have no, you're just dehumanizing of people for being Palestinian, for speaking about Palestinian rights, the dehumanizing of indigenous people who say there shouldn't be a pipeline running through our land, the dehumanizing to a point where people can be imprisoned, killed. The violence we're seeing now has to really just be, well, who is being criminalized? And we can clearly see who the actual criminals, the serial killers are, the people who are stopping the healthcare from coming to people, the people who are actually committing a genocide. So this questioning of the language of terrorism, of criminalization on a really strong level, and solidarity between groups. But I think it's wonderful what the groups are doing, and I'm excited, and I understand people need to get the work done. It's not just talk. It takes energy to get things done, and sometimes you just have to go onto the streets, say to people, what do you need, and then work for housing rights and just do that. Or work with prisoners and say, what solidarity do you need? Sure. How do we work with you and just do the work?
Well, I'm thinking also about like how, for me, and I think you might relate to this, Damaris, there's like a very like artistic aspect to activism, right? Like just in the sense that like making that decision to try to organize something improvised in a sense, like a small protest, right? Like there's so much improvisation and like kind of just on a very like geographical level, like how are we going to deal with the city space? The city's not really intended or planned out necessarily for a protest, right? And then there's like the people are there trying to figure out their chants together, which direction are we going to go, you know? And in the same way, like for me, like these small zine projects, they're not really officialized, right? Like they're just like ways to have a conversation and provoke hopefully other conversations. So in a way, like people often sort of think of art and activism as sort of two spheres, but the energy or sort of like the thinking on your feet improvisation seems for me very connected.
I said to one of my friends, I've been taking in a lot of information about Palestine, and I said to one of my friends, the things that touched me most was the poetry. Because I can receive information which can be quite traumatizing and challenging to receive, but when I read or hear a poem written, suddenly there's this huge... there's this feeling of heart and love blooming and people's lives, just this incredible resilience and persistence of humans. And you were saying, like, the protests are theatre. They are like the mushrooms that appear out of the mycorrhizal web of resistance. They are just like, well, here we are, and we're still here, and we have drums, and we kind of have puppets. And you say this does nothing for us. This is just like the mushroom that bursts forth out of the expression of what we're doing. We're going to take to the streets. And you've seen the sort of Palestine every single weekend, one or two protests, along with all of the amazing fundraising, gathering information from the Palestinian Youth Montreal for Palestine, all these other groups. Incredibly strong, lovely, artistic expressions of people gathering together, being physically with other people, and just walking down the streets for a couple of hours. We're here every week, 16 months. Every week.
Damaris, thank you for this conversation. I really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure to talk with you, Stefan. Thank you.
Thanks. That was a conversation with Damaris Baker, who is an artist and community organizer based in Montreal, reflecting on the Voices Beyond Lockdown zine publication of Free City Radio. It was really a pleasure to speak with Damaris for this project. And this has been another edition of Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph, and we broadcast weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. on CJLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal on Wednesdays at 8 a.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m. on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m. on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m. on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
and on CGSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We are also a podcast. Just look us up, search Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks for tuning in, and I will be back next week.